all that I can be. And maybe one day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn?
Aloha, I am your host, May Leilani, and this is the Universal Spiritual Connection, a place of shared unity and equal common ground for all peoples and cultures, a unity not built on separation and blindness, but a solid foundation built on respect for all walks of life, molded by the thirst of the people for change. In unity, bridging the gap, for we are the voice of we the people. Mahalo to all the listeners of Pal Talk and BBSRadio.com. Our call-in numbers are toll-free, 888-228-4494 and 877-489-6350. Our direct lines, same area code, is 530-776-5185 and 876-9916. Happy New Year's to each and every one of you. I'm so excited about our guest for this evening. I was so excited about the interview that this guest and I did last year in 2008. I requested that he come back to share his wisdom and knowledge with each and every one of you. My apologies, everyone. And so we have him with us again for this evening. Now, our guest is Reverend Ernest Chu. He's also the author of Soul Currencies. Many of you may remember this interview. I want to thank all of you that did call in on the last show. I'd like to take this moment and opportunity to invite each of you to my show page with BBSRadio.com. As you all are familiar with, I have a wealth of information about our guests for this evening. For your convenience in Pal Talk, I also have Ernest's website listed for each of you, so I would like to invite all of you to please explore his website. You'll find wealth of information, great information about his book. I personally have this book, and I have to say, the best way I know how to describe it is an amazing book. I feel very blessed to have it in my possession. So without further delay, allow me to share a bit of information about our guest for this evening. Ernest spent more than 35 years as an investment banker, a corporate executive, an entrepreneur. Ernest has become a widely recognized expert on financing emerging growth companies. He has created more than $1.5 billion in market value for his clients. As an abundance coach, he has evaluated thousands of businesses' proposals, advised hundreds of emerging companies, serving as leader and business coach to 9 early stage companies, with 5 of those companies becoming public companies. In his new book, Soul Currency, Investing in Your Inner Wealth for Fulfillment and Abundance, Ernest identifies the spiritual equivalent of business success and redefines financial value, such as currency, into the organic aliveness of spirit. Of equal importance to his business activities, Ernest currently serves as assistant pastor at Religious Science Fort Lauderdale, the largest religious science church in the Southwest. It is truly an honor that we have him once again on this show. So let's all please give our guest, Ernest Chu a warm welcome to the Universal Spiritual Connection. Aloha, Ernest.
Aloha, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it is such an honor. I was so grateful for our first interview, and you had shared so much wealth of wisdom and knowledge with all of us. I just knew I had to have you back onto the show.
Well, thank you. I'm very honored.
You know, it's really interesting, Ernest, and before I start asking questions here, the title of the book is Soul Currency, Invest in Your Inner Wealth for Fulfillment and Abundance. The website address is soulcurrency.org, and I'll tell you guys, this is a really great book. As many of you know, I have been speaking to you prior to the broadcast. I hope that you have your notebooks out because you're about to receive a lot of powerful information that will help propel you and your own personal empowerment. You know, Ernest, I was reading about your story because you were $1 million in debt. And as I read those words, as you were sharing them with us through your book, I could really feel the magnitude of the situation that you were in. So if you would, could you share a little bit more in depth with us tonight about this debt that you had incurred?
Oh, sure. I think I shared in the book that literally I woke up one day and I had really found out that my partner in the venture that I was had undertaken, it was actually in the water dispensing area, the industry, very much in the pioneering days. So we would have probably been the first out there having vending machines and filling stations for purified water, and we would have been one of the early pioneers in pioneering essences, flavored essences in water. And I was very enthused about that and had invested my own money into it. I had taken two mortgages against my house because that's how much I believed in it. And I had also not really taken a salary, but in fact lived off of my savings and credit cards until the company had gotten their financing. So we were all set to get our financing. We had some major orders lined up, and all of a sudden I woke up one day and found out that there was some undisclosed personal information about my partner. And of course, at that point, the people that were putting up the money, who had actually uncovered that information, that the background wasn't at all what it had been, they had been led to believe. And so that financing melted away. The company melted away. Instead of really getting to that next level, all of a sudden, literally, the bottom fell out. And at that point, that partner tried to pull the pieces together, couldn't, obviously, because a lot of that related to the background had been, I think, fabricated to some degree, and then essentially ended up in another state. For me, I basically had a choice as to whether to declare personal bankruptcy or face the music, and I felt like and I was told that if I ever expected to be in the financial area again, I couldn't really declare bankruptcy. It's a major disclosure item. So I took what I thought was the right course, which was to not declare bankruptcy. I figured, hey, listen, I incurred the debt, and a lot of that was personal. You know, I have to stand up and face the music and try to find a way to deal with it. And you know, and that's that was sort of the beginning, and I wish I had known all the things that would come after that. I mean, I didn't even, at that point, didn't even look at my credit score. It was probably in the 400s. at that point. And but what I really went through was a real hard time of having to deal with creditors who were much more adept at making me feel guilty than I was able to convince them that I really didn't have any money. And I felt really bad about the whole thing. There was a whole lot of shame because of the way I was brought up in terms of Chinese upbringing. Fortunately, I wasn't Japanese, and you know, you don't fall on your sword because of that, because of the because of the shame. But it was a very difficult time, and basically, I went through I could remember going through a grocery store and not being able to buy 98% of what I saw. I managed to live on these ramen noodles over a period of time, and learned pretty much how to live at a point where I could survive, and I knew that to some degree that I was being watched over, because I really did have you know, at the right time I would find money in the back of my car or things like that. I wasn't finding, didn't hit the lottery or anything, but I was able to periodically just manage to survive, get through. You know, I'd negotiate with my ex-wife that we had still at that point not formally divorced. So I said, I'll be your tax write-off. You could, and she was doing very well, and I'll make you a deal. Since the government would get 100% of it, why don't you give me 50% of what you save? And she bought into it. So that was one of my biggest sources of income that year. So, you know, you live by your wits, but also I really at that point understand a lot about what people are going through today.
Yes.
And I will never pass a person who is either homeless or hungry on, you know, who's standing at the entrance of the freeway with this sign, because I know what it's like. And if, and sure, people say, hey, they're just going to go out and buy drugs or alcohol. You know, if somebody needs to basically stand at the entrance to a freeway, and if that's what they're going to do, then okay, you know. But on the off chance that it's somebody that really needs that money, that was like me, and I never, thank God, I never ever had to do that. But I mean, I was just probably minutes or even at that point of being homeless, except I didn't know that. And that,
yes,
was, that's one of the things that I really clearly know, is that when you live out of fear as opposed to live out of possibility, and I never gave up living out of possibility, then you can, the material world around you reflects that you are living out of possibility as opposed to having nothing. And
yes,
I could have very easily said, I've got nothing, and I could have given up. And I could have started to look for a place under a bridge, but I never did. And
that's an important key right there in the statement that you just made. You know, this is I relate to you so well, because I had a very similar situation happen to me as well, because I owned a large corporation. And one of the strongest messages that I would like to convey to all the listeners is that, one, is never to give up. Number two is to really plug into yourself, and that we are so much more powerful, and our cash reserve, if you want to call it that, of who we are in our talents and our gifts, we're so wealthy. And all we have to do is be able to really tap into our personal resources to propel us into making life a much better place for ourselves, and to be able to give to others as well. What I really, really liked is your term when you said you answered Spirit's call during this this crisis that you went through. Share a little bit about that turning point for you, Ernest.
Well, I think that, and I don't know if I've ever talked about it that much, I literally had a situation where I ended up finding some money in the, I had a dream and I found some money in the back seat under the, you know, by going through the trunk. And there was a whole cache of money. It's about $1.65 of coins. So I didn't exactly hit the lottery, but this was a big day for me. So I immediately took the money, went down to the grocery store, because that's what I did when I got some money, was to go to the grocery store to get some food, because I didn't know when the next time I'd have money to buy groceries. And so I knew exactly what I was going to get. I was going to get these packages of noodles. I had some coupons. I got very good at really clipping coupons, finding things where that were free, et cetera. And as I went down there, I noticed there was somebody sitting in the near the doorway. It was a homeless person. And I thought to myself, boy, that's a little odd, because in New Jersey at that time, and this is out in northwest New Jersey, northern New Jersey, in Morris County, there aren't too many homeless people, or if they are, they're not always sitting visibly around, but because it's a generally a pretty suburban area. And this woman was right there, and looked like sort of had several coats on, and had gloves where the fingers were cut off, and basically had dark skin because she'd been out in the cold weather, and just sat there, and there was a sort of a basket there where she had all her worldly possessions. And I kind of, she was sitting near the outdoor, and I had to go into the indoor, and I sort of had a lot of compassion for her, but I could only think about all the food that I needed to get, and that $1.65 that was really all I had, and at that time. And essentially, I went there, I had a great shopping spree. I actually had I think I bought everything I needed for under a dollar, and I had 65 cents left. And I was just feeling amazed and on top of the world and very empowered about the whole thing, and had a grocery bag full of stuff. It's amazing what you can do when you are forced to have your back against the wall. And as I went out, I saw this, I forgot that the lady was there, and I saw there, I stepped out there, I'm sitting there, I'm carrying this bag, and I stopped, and my eyes met her eyes, and it was like time had stopped. I could see how hungry she was, and I noticed that there were, even though she had dark skin, there were patches where you could see the pink, where literally she had some cuts and scraped her hand. And so I noticed all of that, and all of a sudden it was no longer, it was just one human being to another. And I just did the first thing that came naturally, which is to reach into my pocket, grab whatever change I had, and give it to her. And then I stopped, and as I was getting ready to move away, I said, I took some of my food and gave it to her. And then I had about a half mile walk up a long steep hill to this house that I was had one room that I was staying in, and the only reason I had that room was that it had been advertised to rent. And I told them about my situation. I said, I have to be honest with you, I don't know if I'm always going to be able to pay you. But he looked at me and he said, I see that you've had some hard times, but I'd rather have somebody in my house that's honest, that I don't have to worry about. And the fact that you even told me how you really, what you're really going through, and the fact that you owned up to the fact that you might not be able to pay me, you know, I trust you. And so they let me have this one room. And actually, to give you an idea, it was like a single bed, but it actually was the largest thing in the room, and there wasn't much else in the room, and there wasn't much room to move. But I was so grateful to have a roof over my head, and
yes.
Essentially, I had that half mile walk up the hill to that one room that I was staying in, and during that time, it was like a civil war was going on. There was a part of me that said, "What are you talking about? You know, you just gave away all your money, and you gave away 3 days worth of food. I mean, what are you, crazy? I mean, you know, somebody else will give her food." And there was another part of me that said, I did the right thing. I know that this was, this is something that I had to do, I had to do that. And what this did was, essentially, when I got into my room, it was just, this whole thing was just going in my head, and finally, the compassionate part won, and I just sat there by the bed, and I just cried for about 20 minutes. And I began to realize that what that had done was to really open my heart and really open me up to spirit, so that I could really see that it wasn't about me. It was really about something a lot greater.
Yes.
At that point, I then became open, and I realized, hey, you know, I haven't really spent much time praying. And I know how to do that, but I'm not that familiar because I hadn't done it. So I really started to do that, and I think I mentioned that there might have been a paper on the floor at that time, and I reached down and picked it up, and it happened to have been a prayer that somebody had sent me. She had actually had a psychic send it to me. She had thought in her goodness that the psychic would write a prediction and predict that it would be all over. But instead, in her wisdom, she sent me a prayer, and that was the perfect thing at that time. And that got me really beginning to become really clear about what my future was. And that's what happens when you really allow spirit to really be a part of you, and to really understand that that's who you are, that it's not really about you. There never has been a you. It's always been that expression of spirit within you. And so I literally the next day I woke up, and I was very clear about what I needed to do, that I had to look at where did I have the most fun, where did I make the most money, where was I most appreciated in the jobs, and that was where I needed to go. And the answer came that it was the second job I held on Wall Street, and that was where I ended up going. And I talked a little bit about that, about how that all began to unfold, and literally one thing led to another, and eventually I ended up in Florida on a situation that materialized where the timing was exactly right. It was all what appeared to be coincidence, but we know better to know that's really flow. And so that all happened. And the interesting part about that whole experience was that about several months after this whole thing happened, and I had this now job in New York that was paying me four weeks after I was digging around in the back of my car, and I met the homeless lady. I was literally in New York, and I had a job for $6,000 a month, and later that went up to $10,000 a month, and I ended up deciding that now that I had some money, I was going to go back and I was going to buy a coat. I was going to do something for this homeless lady. And so I don't think I've ever told anybody about this, but literally there is a Korean newsstand at the end that he was strategically positioned so I could see the entire strip mall. And he was always there. He always was at, he was 7 days a week. He was always there. He knew everything that was going on, and he always saw everything. And being Asian, we got to be pretty friendly, and I would come by and I'd buy a newspaper or something like that. And so I went back to him and I said, "You remember several weeks ago I came down and I, you know, I was I was the last time I was here when I didn't have any money and so forth, because he knew what I was going through. And he said, yeah, he mentioned that was October. I said, yeah, and do you remember I went into the store and there was this homeless lady sitting out in front. And he looked at me. He said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, look, she was sitting right by the outdoor. Couldn't have missed her. She had her card and her baggage and so forth and so on. And he said, I remember when you were there, but there wasn't a homeless lady. There never is a homeless lady. There never was any homeless lady in this store or this mall. They don't come here. They're not here. I said, I would know that if I saw it. I'd be the first one to know. And she wasn't. I never saw this lady. And I looked at him. I said, you had to have seen this lady. She was there. I mean, she was taking up the whole part of the outdoor. And maybe the manager of the store chased her away or something. He looked at me and said, look, I'm here 7 a.m. in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. And there wasn't a homeless lady. There's never been a homeless lady. I'd see one.
You know, Ernest, I had a very similar situation that happened to me as well. And this was a woman as well. And I just knew, you know, you just kind of know just by observation. And I gave her everything I had, even though I knew that I was going to be doing without. But I felt that she needed it so much more than I ever did. And so I did. I gave it to her. And people said, excuse me, there's no woman. Because I've gone back to see her again, and no one recalls her, including the managers of the store.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
It is. It is, and it happens all the time. You know, and this is where the show is so important to me, Ernest, and I'm very grateful to you for coming and sharing with all of us. You know, all of us. Where we're at today, we see it worldwide where, you know, people are losing their homes, their jobs, even in their retirement plans, they're losing those even, and they're barely making ends meet. So I'd like to find out from you today, what is it that the listeners tonight can really do to help propel themselves to get beyond all of this? Because you and I both know that we can.
Yes, and we can. And having done this, having been in this, and also now seeing many of my students and many of my congregation in that situation, I see a lot of these opportunities, and these are opportunities for people to really get to a point where they can really right the ship again and really feel good. And this isn't necessarily a case of you could say, well, we're going through economic hard times. I mean, yeah, we're getting, if you want to compare it with what used to happen, yeah, it's economic hard times. But you have to also think that economic hard times are when, you know, when you're in West Africa and you don't have a pair of shoes. And if you don't eat, there's a chance that, you know, you may starve to death. Or in India. So, those are what I would really call economic hard times. I mean, what we have are things where we can't really buy the consumer goods that we'd love to do, and those are the things we start to focus on when we say, I can't do this, or I don't have enough, or we're going through hard times, and the government needs to bail us out. So the important thing is when we are in those situations, and actually as many as 70% of the families in the United States are really one paycheck or two paychecks away from really falling on a necessity where they won't be able to keep up with the overhead that they have. And so part of what I would recommend is, I would say part of it is to, it's very important to really stay focused by turning within on and really examining what it is that you choose to experience in these so-called economic difficulties. And one of them is that you need to have a sense of optimism. I'm not saying to people go and disregard what you have, but in fact, quite the opposite, is to really pull together, take care of the details, but at the same time, don't focus on what you don't have, but focus on how you're going to be creating more. And the way that you focus on creating more or being more or even finding a job or doing whatever it takes to create more for the family, create more cash flow, those are the things that you need to focus on. It's different with each person. There's no universal formula, but the whole point is what you have to do is look and focus on possibility. Understand that possibility is what happens, you're only really one phone call away from success too. And that's the thing is that people don't realize is they will go around and they will buy into all the negativity that they get. They're depressed that they got laid off. Their business has gone down significantly, and they buy into that. And literally, it would, in terms of a business, all it would take is one phone call from a client. All it would take for someone is one phone call from literally. Someone that might have heard about you. So the important thing is to turn within and start to look at your connections, start to look at how you feel about what you can offer. Look at those things rather than, and look at the substance of it as opposed to the exact form, because let spirit, let God take care of the actual form it's going to take. You use the substance of optimism, of really focusing on and being grateful for what you have, and focusing on everything, including being loving in all your interactions and coming from that position of wholeness. And it may seem like that's the most difficult thing in the world, but you're at the point whenever you get into trouble, it's your negative ego that is always taking over, and if you allow that to run the ship, then you're going to really be in have more of the same. So your negative ego really wants you to not be successful, to be poor, to be unloved, to be separated, to perhaps lose everything and be there and to eventually die. That's your negative ego's fantasy. So literally, when you buy into that, you're buying into fear instead of love.
That's right. I'd like to read this, if I may. It's on page 32. Before I do that, we're talking to Ernest D. Chun, and he is the author of Soul Currency, Investing Your Inner Wealth for Fulfillment and Abundance. The website address is soulcurrency.org. I'm on page 32. The title is Mastering Soul Currency. Love and forgiveness for both yourself and others is the prerequisite for fulfilled living and prosperity. You are constantly in the flow of energy. Any thoughts of fear, resentment, anger, vengefulness, or unworthiness repel the very energy that circulates goodness. In the presence of such thoughts, the energy of creative flow takes a detour and moves around you instead of through you. And I ask all of you tonight, really reflect on this passage that I have just shared with all of you tonight, And I'd like to add this as well. For every negative thought or every negative action, it takes 45 days to clear it. Now think about that, 45 days. Ernest, one of the things that I had wanted to share with you is I started gathering people together and asking them, what is your dreams? What are some of the things you have fantasized about or envisioned yourself becoming in life? And so as individuals started sharing this with me, I started saying, okay, well, let's work together to help you make your dreams come true. And it's incredible because what I'm seeing now, and each of them have to do their own work, obviously. If there's a talent that I'm able to share to help that individual, I will offer that freely. Because what I'm finding as I give, I'm also receiving. As they become successful, so am I. And it's just amazing to watch so many people build websites, and one individual is becoming a radio host. That was a dream of hers for years, and she's doing it. Isn't that incredible?
Yes, it is. And there's nothing that says you can't do it other than that little voice or that committee that sits on your shoulder that prejudges everything and disempowers you.
That's right. So let me ask you this, because a lot of this has to do with our partnership with self. So would you share some of your thoughts about having that partnership with self?
Well, you see, that's the biggest, that's one of the biggest myths that we have, because we have a tendency to think that there's a real self. But the self that we think of is really the illusion self, which is really ego. It's really the part of you that really sees yourself as that physical being, and you look in the mirror and you kind of tuck your, sort of throw your shoulders back and you kind of smile and put on your best show for yourself. But you see, the whole point is that literally the real essence of it is our energy. And that energy is, where does that energy come from? You know, if we have a thought, who's the thinker? If we're the visionary, who's the visionary? Who's the envisioner? And that's really not us. It is really that express part of, it's a way that we express God. And in every cell of our body, there is that expression. And really without that, you know, without that energy to hold us together, there's what Deepak Chopra calls entropy, which is essentially the cells start to literally decay and fall apart. And as we express that, we have to understand that there really isn't a self as we perceive it, you know, because we have a tendency to think, okay, when we get away from that, we're selfless. But really my belief is that if you really are totally understanding what yourself is about, you should, instead of saying self less, you should say self more. Because in fact, you are more. You're more than yourself. You are literally that part of you that is spirit, that is allowing God expressing through the very uniqueness that you have, so that it appears that there's an individuality. In the same way that perhaps snowflakes or zebra stripes are individualized aspects of spirit. But really, in a sense, if you can accept that, then you can really work in partnership with the universal energy that comes through you. And that's how you work with your soul currency. That's how you work with and become aware that you have the what I call spiritual assets, which are really that divine energy that is part of all of us, that is that great and grand possibility of what you can be. And if you're not that, if you choose to be just someone that just wants to live their life out and retire, you know, you're shortchanging the world. You're shortchanging yourself.
Yes.
You know, the fact is, when you believe that you can't play big. That's one of the greatest counterfeit beliefs that we have.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I had a former senator from New Hampshire on the show in 2008. I believe it was in November. And, you know, I always ask my guests at the ending of the show, you know, any last thoughts that you would like to share with the listeners. And this is what he shared before he said goodnight to everyone. He says, do not allow yourselves to buy into the illusion that we're all in debt. And I thought that was really interesting for him to say. But yet at the same time, he had stepped into the inside of, you know, being a senator of what was really going on. And I know that a lot of the things that we are, that we watch on TV is all just paper or electronically sent here and there, but there's really no money exchange going on. What are your thoughts on that statement?
Oh, I think he's absolutely right there is an illusion. Money is an illusion in that sense, and it's so easy to really attach what we call fear and unworthiness to a lot of the things, so that when you get yourself into debt, there is a what I call a debt consciousness, and that's that consciousness is one that really takes you further and further away from truly loving yourself and truly understanding that a lot of your financial behavior is all about unhealed issues. It's not about making bad decisions or not knowing about not being educated. Well, you know, to some degree it is, but a lot of the things that are motivated in terms of spending money, in terms of handling it, even in terms of running your business, is sometimes about deserving. It's about a lot of people feel that they don't deserve to have money, and so the only money that they can make or have is what they end up borrowing. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me a little bit of the fact that people used to think arsenic was something that may preserved and created long life. And to some degree, you know, taking on certain types of debt, which are very toxic debt, high interest type debt, is almost like taking arsenic in your diet. And because you're never going to be able to pay it back at a point where, because you get to a point really where the interest rates really begin to be excessive, and they get to a point where it tips it to, you would have to have a major infusion of cash in order to even get yourself to a responsible side.
So what would be your suggestions for those out there that may find themselves in that situation? Is there actions that they can literally take to start shifting that?
Well, the important thing is to shift the consciousness. And yes, actions do are symbolic of shifting consciousness. One thing is usually when you're in a financial crisis, and I don't call it a financial crisis, it's really more of a what I call it, it's a liquidity issue, because you really have huge amounts of assets that are within you, and therefore it's not like you don't have anything, but you could be like New York City, which had a lot of assets but literally didn't know how to manage its money and ended up having to put themselves on a financial diet. But literally the first thing you should do literally is to get the energy flowing. And part of that is, and there's a tendency when things aren't going right to just sit back and watch television or sleep or do things that are not necessarily worry, not necessarily good for you. And it helps to keep the energy stuck. So if what you have to do is clean out your basement, clean out your closets, give away stuff that you don't use. I mean, you would think, hey, you know, when I'm in that crisis, that would be the last thing I would do. But literally, there may even be things that you could sell. But again, do that joyfully in terms of, hey, I'm getting the energy moving, because what I have and everything that's been in my space is contributing to me being stuck. And so whatever I have to do to get this thing done, even if I have to give away 100 T-shirts or whatever it is, I will do that, and it will help to get me unstuck. So that's symbolic of that. It doesn't in and of itself solve your issue, but it literally gets you to the point where you're going to start to feel like you're completing things, you're doing things. It's also very important if you're one of these people that starts projects but never completes them, you know.
Yes.
Start to get that done. If you have a workspace that is cluttered, unclutter it, because, again, that's stuck energy that goes there. So that's the first thing I would do. The second thing I would do would be to literally begin to make a promise to yourself. And that promise to yourself is something that will be tested periodically, but it does work. And that is, when you basically are able to create money, rather than just going out and just saying, oh my gosh, I'm just going to pay off some of these credit cards and stuff, and understand that where the source comes from, because again, you're part of that source, you're part of that flow. And essentially what I would then do is I would take 10%, and I'd put it into some type of fund or somewhere where I would give it to support whatever it is that I get my spiritual good from.
Yes.
I'd take another 10% and I'd pay myself. And
that's
I'd put
right.
that away, and I'd take another 10% and I'd start to pay down my high interest credit cards, the highest debt that I have. Some of this debt is like 27 or 30%. It's extraordinary. And
yes.
And you see that the first time, or you may, the first month or two, you might look at it and realize that there's nothing left, and all of a sudden you have to tighten your belt and whatever it is. But you see, once you start to put some rules and some empowering ways to really have your energy be directed in the right way, you will find that your outer world starts to change. And
that's
the important thing, is to get that outer world to change. So you're doing a number of things. You're getting the energy going. You're putting in some things that are supporting you as opposed to really weakening you. And then the last thing I would do would be, each morning and each evening, be grateful. Do your prayers. Live out a possibility by envisioning, rather than saying, God, I need $40 this week to pay my I'm going to be $40 short. What you really need to be opening up to is that, you know, I no longer am bound by the appearances of lack and limitation, that I now am open to receive from every source, that every source supports my life. And so as you begin to do this each day, each morning when you wake up, to set the intention of the day, and before you go to bed, no matter how tired you are, this sets the intention of the evening, because when you're asleep, you dream, you're really in a, you do a lot of work in your dreams as well. So I found that to be very helpful, and take it from someone that has been $1 million in debt and has had hundreds of creditors calling them and had so many dunning notices that I couldn't even put them on my table. They were so high. So I ended up finding a corner, and I built this pyramid. It's a three-sided pyramid, putting all this stuff all the way up to the top. It was enormous. They could have been letters to Santa Claus. I would have had sacks and sacks and sacks of them if I ever put them in a sack.
Yes.
So I know what people have to go through.
Important to watch our inner dialogue with ourselves, you know, as we had touched on earlier, you know, about worrying and fear and, you know, you're not going to amount to anything. All those different types, because, you know, I even take notice as well as when I'm speaking to others, you know, she's just a beautiful, beautiful young lady and extremely talented, and she always ends things with, "I hope so." And yeah. and to me, I'm going, let that part go. And know
right.
that you will make great things happen.
The important thing also is to eliminate the words "I want" or "I need" and substitute something that's empowering, like "I choose." So in other words, if you're saying, "Hey, I need money," well, in that context, all you're going to get is a circumstance which just continues to affirm that you need more money. But
yes.
if you say, I choose to have lots more money. I choose to create more money. I choose to enjoy what I create. Those are the things that are empowering. And essentially, you have to really lead your life as if the universe were listening, because it is. In not in the way that we think it is, but it is setting itself up. You're setting yourself up to really create in the material world what is being created in your thoughts and in your inner world.
Well, Ernest, we have definitely come to the end of the show, and I personally really thank you for coming back again and sharing with all of us. And we have been speaking with Ernest D. Chu, and he is the author of Soul Currency. I was so grateful for the first interview. I did ask Ernest to come back and share his thoughts with all of us again. I want to remind all of you to explore my show page with bbsradio.com. As you all know, I have a wealth of information about each of our guests. I have the entire month of January's schedule already posted for your convenience as well. An amazing, amazing book. I feel very blessed that I have it in my possession. And I have been really applying a lot of this information that Ernest has shared with all of us. And we do hope that you'll come back again, Ernest. I really enjoy having you on this show.
Well, thank you. You've been a great interviewer and host, and I will come back anytime you'd like to have me.
Thank you so much. Remember, to each and every one of you, you are the empowerment, the authority of you, your worlds, and activities. Never allow anything to disturb your spirit. Rise up, sisters and brothers, because it is right there in front of us. All we have to do is claim it. On that note, I want to say good night to each and every one of you, and God bless. Good night, Ernest, and good night to all of you.
Good night.